John chapter number 3, verse number 22. It says, after these things came Jesus and his disciples into the land of Judea. And there he tarried with them and baptized. And John also was baptizing in Aenon near to Salem, because there was much water there. And they came and were baptized, for John was not yet cast into prison. Then there arose a question between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purifying. And they came unto John and said unto him, Rabbi, he that was with thee beyond Jordan, to whom thou bearest witness, behold, the same baptizeth, and all men come to him. John answered and said, a man can receive nothing except it be given him from heaven. Ye yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but that I am sent before him. He that hath the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom, which standeth and heareth him, rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This is my joy, therefore is fulfilled. And this is what I want to get at and springboard off of. Verse number 30, he must increase, but I must decrease. So tonight, just for a little bit, and I probably only going to be able to get into my first point of this message, but I want to preach on letting God increase. What does it take to let God increase? What does it take for us to decrease? So this verse right here, he must increase, but I must decrease. So I began meditating on this verse and the meaning that it held, and it's just a tiny little verse with a few words, but it's simple yet profound. The way for Christ to increase within our life, we have to let go of some things. We have to make our life in the flesh smaller, and we have to let God become the majority of our life. So through the study of this verse, I was directed to the book of James, and we'll get there in a few minutes. But I started out looking at this verse and breaking it down and how it's shown. And you see in the first word of verse number 30 is he. So the first word in the verse is he. From that we can see that God is meant to be at the forefront. He should be put first in our lives. He should be our priority. He should be our leader. So now I ask you this question: how can he be at the lead? He must increase. Christ must increase in our lives. So the definition of increase is an instance of growing or making greater. So for God to increase in our lives, he must continually be a growing part of our lives. We must let him become a greater part of our lives as time goes by. We cannot expect that he will be a greater part of our lives if we do not continually choose to make him the leader of our life. If we are not reliant and in deep relations with God, he's not going to be the leader of our life. So that must be a daily choice. We must daily let him increase in our lives. However, for him to increase, that means, as the second part of the verse, we must decrease. So Christ increasing in our lives goes hand in hand with our flesh, our sinful, prideful man decreasing. For God to be the forefront, we must take a step back. Our flesh cannot be the leader of our life. Sin takes over a man who does not have Christ as the leader of his life. We must feed the spiritual man and leave the flesh to die. So, here's where I began thinking. So what are some ways, what are some areas in our life that we can work on that we can decrease our flesh? What can we do to decrease our flesh for God to increase in our lives? So, for our flesh to die, for the spiritual man to take over, has to take over our mind, our body, our actions, and our beliefs. They all must be changed. So if you would now turn over to the book of James. Book of James, chapter number 1. We're going to read through the first 18 verses of chapter number 1, because I think that's all we're going to get through tonight. So James chapter number 1, verse number 1 says, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greeting. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given to him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low. Because of the flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perisheth. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the power, or he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Of his own will begat he us with the word, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So James is preaching immediately here in chapter 1. He's preaching on how a Christian ought to conduct themselves. So this opening he just jumps straight to the point, and he wants these converts, those who are saved, to conduct themselves like Christ. The word Christians literally means Christ-like. So if you call yourself a Christian, but you're not striving to be Christ-like, I ask you, what does that make you? It makes you a liar. So I began looking at this, and he just jumps right into it in verse number 2. He says, my brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into divers temptations. So the first thing I see, and this is the point through the first 18 verses, is endurance. So a Christian, for us to decrease and increase in our lives, we have to endure a lot of things. The life of the Christian is not all roses and sunshine. This is the very first thing that James preaches in his book. A very important quality that we must have is endurance. For Christ to increase in our lives, we must be willing to endure hardships. As time goes by, we will be chipped away at, and as we are chipped away at, it will reveal Christ. There will be storms in your life that will come up. However, we have a God who is above all and can work any situation. We need to have our trust in Him and the strength in Him to endure what comes our way. So in verse number 2, he says, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. So count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. So that word divers, it means different, all kinds. So when you fall into these, all these different kinds of temptations, these different trials in our life that might arise, we're supposed to be joyous. Now, don't take that as that we should be happy when we have an opportunity to sin. And we'll get to that. The Lord's wanting us to take joy in the opportunity to see how strong our faith is. Opportunity to better get in a relationship with Him. Verse number 3 says, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. So temptations come about to put our relationship to God to the test and to test how strong our faith is. Those temptations are in our life to teach us patience. Patience teaches us how to be happy with what we have. Patience teaches us to be joyous and content. So we're not to joy in the opportunity for sin, but rather to be joyous that we have an opportunity to show our love for Christ. And I just put this as an example. My mother, she was a high school teacher at Mount Nebo, and she always told me from that experience, never pray for patience, because when you pray for patience, God's going to give you an opportunity to work that patience. And with high schoolers, it was a daily basis. So she learned the hard way. So don't pray for patience is what she taught me. Verse number 4, but let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. So we're supposed to be joyous. We're supposed to be content through patience. Verse number 5 says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. So verse number 5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. So when you come against a trial, we're to ask God, not for the removal of the affliction that we're under, not for the removal of the trial, but rather pray for the wisdom to be able to understand and take care of that problem and go through that trial. So whenever there's a temptation or a trial in our lives, we must seek God. I'm going to turn over to Proverbs chapter number 2 real quick, because I think it's a great chapter on wisdom. Proverbs chapter number 2. Get over there. Verse number 1 says, my son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding. Yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding, so just what we're talking about in James, then, verse number 5, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. He giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them that walketh uprightly. He keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, to deliver thee from the way of the evil man, from the man that speaketh froward things, who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked, whose ways are crooked and they froward in their paths, to deliver thee from the strange women, even from the stranger which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the God of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God. For her house inclineth unto death, and her paths unto the dead. None that go unto her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life. that thou mayest walk in the way of good men and keep the paths of righteous. For the upright shall dwell in the land, and the perfect shall remain in it, but the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and the transgressors shall be rooted out of it. So Proverbs chapter number 2, wisdom comes from God. That's what we learn right here. Wisdom comes from God. We do not find wisdom from some philosopher or teacher within this world. We find it from God. We find it in God's Word. So we find wisdom by getting into God's Word and pleading with God to give us the understanding we need. It says, verse number 3, yea, if thou criest after knowledge and liftest up thy voice for understanding. So he's telling us we have to pray for wisdom. We have to plead to God for wisdom. We have a whole handbook on how to live life and deal with our trials, and we have a God who always has an open and fervent ear, yet we tend to not use either and seek other ways and other teachers to tell us how to fix our problems. Wisdom comes from God. We have to cry after knowledge. Here in Proverbs chapter 2, we find that the wisdom that God can bestow, you can see it in verse number 6 and 7, says, for the Lord giveth wisdom, out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up wisdom for the righteous. So we see that it can give us instruction. So when there's a trial and we need instruction, we can get that wisdom. Then we can see in verse number 8, it says, he keepeth the paths of judgment and preserveth the way of his saints. So that wisdom he can give us, it can give us satisfaction. In verse number 9 through 11, then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment, equity, yea, every good path. When wisdom entereth into thine heart and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee. So we see that wisdom can also give us protection. Wisdom helps us fight, as you can see throughout the rest of the chapter, it helps us fight the evil men and the women who desire to make us fall. It's no matter the person or the situation, God can give us the wisdom to deal with it. Now, let's go back to James chapter 1. In verse number 5. So if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. So James 1:5 says that God will give wisdom liberally, and it upbraideth not. So in other words, God gives wisdom generously. And God gives it generously, and he does not fault anyone for needing wisdom. Verse number 6 says, but let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. So let them that need wisdom ask in faith, not wavering. Here is God's condition for giving his wisdom. He will generously give his wisdom if we ask him in faith, enduring, strong faith. So you must have a genuine belief and want for the wisdom of the Lord. Our God is a giving God, but he does not give to those who are not his. And you can also see that God always puts weed out those people that are not truly his and truly has that faith. He always puts a condition with what he says. And just like with that, in verse number 5, or verse number 6, that let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, we can see different examples of that condition throughout the Bible. The Lord would only, when he was on this earth, he would only heal those that would believe in him. Romans 8:28 is a good example. It says, and we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. So God does not work together all things for good for those who just say they love him. He does it for those who truly love him and are laborers for him. That's where a lot of people mess up. So he must increase, but I must decrease. Most people's perception and belief is with a little of his increase, I must be getting a lot of increase. So no, that's not how it works. When he increases, we should be decreasing. We have to become his servant. We have to become his child, his bride. All those three things that he tells us that we are as his, as the Christians and as the church, they have three things in common. They're all positions under him. So we have to be lower than him. We have to decrease under him. So those who are increasing in the world are not increasing because God is helping them. God's children do not increase in worldliness. The devil's behind those who increase in the world. The man who has a wavering mind and spirit will not receive the gifts of God. Luke 16:13 says, No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. He cannot serve God and mammon. So someone who tries to be God's servant while flirting and enjoying the things of this world, they become like a wave. So it moves around, it bobs, it tosses to and fro, and it eventually crashes. Verse number 7 says, "For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord." So God, as I already stated, God does not give that kind of person his help. The Lord only helps those who are his. Verse number 8 says, "A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways." So someone who claims to be that Christ-like Christian, yet is trying to be a part of that world, as already said, is a liar. If he's trying to be a part of that world and enjoying the world, that person's unstable. And at any moment, that person is going to crash. As God's servant, we have to have our minds pure and fully devoted to the Lord. Verse number 9, it says, "Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted, but the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace of the fashion of it perisheth. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways." So, what I get out of that, for us to endure, we have to rejoice. So no matter how rich or how poor you are, you're still one of his children, and you still got to rejoice. You need to give the Lord his praise that he deserves. In both cases, he is taking care of you, no matter if you're rich or if you're poor. And I'm on the poor side, but I know the Lord's taking care of me. So he's taking care of you. He has blessed you and he loves you. We're not a part of different sects based off of money. We're not in different sections in the church. We're not supposed to be sitting farther up in the church based off of what we put in the offering plate. And that's to call out Joel Osteen, because that's how he runs his church. The more you give, the farther up you sit. That's not how it works. God uses what each person gives. So we got to rejoice together. We're all his children. Verse number 12 says, "Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him." So God will award the crown of life for those who have loved him when we get to heaven. We're not to be working for earthly possessions, but rather working on earth for Christ to obtain, working on earth for Christ to obtain heavenly possessions. I'm sure none of us is going to get a gold crown in this life, but there's an opportunity to get three of them when we get to heaven. the King of Kings is going to give us, can give us three crowns, where we ain't getting a crown anywhere around here. We ain't no king around here, but the Lord, Lord's going to give us those crowns. Verse number 13 says, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. So God does not send sin and temptations in our life. If God cannot be tempted by evil, how could he tempt others? Only the mind of a sinful man could charge and blame God for their sin. I saw a post, I think it was this morning, and it was a lady, she was talking about how she had gotten away from the Lord because of different things happening in life and her blaming God for what's happened in life. That's what the Lord's trying to say right here is, I'm not to blame. I'm trying to help you. I love you. And I want to work good in your life because I love you. So we can't blame God. And this is talking about sin. But we can't blame God for when bad things happen. The Lord has a purpose for everything. And sometimes, as we're saying in this chapter, sometimes it's to test your faith. Verse number 14 says, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. So all men are tempted by sin because it's within our flesh. That's where it comes from. Our own lust is what is tempted. And lust, it means intense desire. It's not just about sexual desires. It's any intense desire that we have in our flesh. That can be money, possessions, what have you. Whatever that thing is that your mind draws to, maybe, and it goes along with idolatry, not putting something above the Lord. Same thing with lust, is you're leaning into idolatry with different things. You have your mind set towards something specific. And lust is any intense desire. So whatever that intense desire you may have, you're going to be tempted by that. Verse number 16 says, do not err, my beloved brethren. Then verse 17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. So, whatever that lust may be in your life, whatever that intense desire, anything sinful that's drawing you away from God, when you let it in, it brings in the sin, and if you let it run rampant, it will bring death. You must take care of that sin. You need to get it settled immediately. You must endure the temptation and be strong to not let that temptation take control of your life. So do not err. Don't be mistaken, in other words. Don't be mistaken. All the good and perfect gifts are given by God. If there's something, if you have an intense desire that's causing you to lust, that's not because God put it there. That is your flesh wanting it. All the good and perfect gifts are given by God. He does not give gifts that are not found as good and perfect in His sight. They're good and perfect in His sight, not good and perfect in our sight. It's good and perfect in His sight. So it's beyond perfect. It's not good and perfect. What we might perceive as good and perfect can be sin. But what the Lord's showing is good and perfect. That's what He deals with. He would not gift something through sin. So take for example, if you have to sin for your well-being, do you think that God is in that? If your well-being is taking and hurting your relationship with God, do you think that's right? when something sinful is being offered to you, or the opportunity will cause you to sin, you think that opportunity is from God. No, because he deals in what is good and what is perfect. Verse number 18 says, of his own will begat he us with the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So we are not because of our works. As we've stated, the flesh is sinful. What we can get out of it, what we find good and perfect, is sinful. So we're not good because of our works. We cannot help our own selves. God is the ruler of what is good and perfect. Therefore, it was by his own will that he gave us his word. It is by his own will that he gave us the opportunity for salvation. And you see why right here? Because he desires our love. We love him because he first loved us. We are his first fruits. So those first fruits, they're prized possessions. We're his prized possession. It's just taking that example of us being God's children. We, a parent, prizes their children. We are his prized children. We're his prized possessions. So endurance, God wants us to endure because he loves us. He wants to give us the help we need to do just that. For God to increase in our lives, endurance is the first key to success. We have to let him be our forefront, our captain, and our leader. So when shots are fired, when storms arise, and when struggles come about, we have to decrease. We have to let go of the lust of our flesh to fight the temptations. To get through our trial, we must let go of the world and cling to him. Less of us and more of him. He can handle it all, just cling to him. Cling to his word and be in prayer to him for wisdom to face your trials. Keep firm with God, and God will firmly keep you. So I hope that was a help to y'all tonight. That's what I have tonight.